It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushu Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
This is Ron, Mike. Thank you, Busty. This is Ron. Mike's not with us tonight. Mike's working. We all have day jobs. This is fun, but can't make a living at it. Unless you want to support us, unless you want to send us money, we'll be happy to quit and do this all the time. But I don't think that's going to happen. So Mike's not with us tonight. I'm going to do an abbreviated show tonight. We're not going to be on here for an hour, hour and a half. We don't have a guest. I have been trying to get a hold of guests and have not been able to get a hold of a guest. That doesn't mean that we won't in the future. It just simply means that because of the holiday yesterday and all that, I think it really threw a bind into the whole thing. That's a holiday here in America. If you're listening to this from Canada or any other country, 4th of July, our Independence Day, was yesterday. And so we pretty much shut down yesterday. So we are going to just talk about some miscellaneous stuff today, just odds and ends, this different stuff that I haven't had an opportunity to talk about because we've been having guests on all that. Next week, hopefully, I'm going to be able to get a hold of a cooper next week, a barrel company or one that used to do barrels. I got a couple of leads here. And hopefully, maybe we might get a hold of a meadery. I'm curious to talk to somebody who does mead wine simply because, well, if you listen to the program last week, George told us that there is a meadery in Pennsylvania that does like 10 different mead wines. And I'm really curious to talk to him to see how the different mead flavors come about. Obviously, it's from different flowers, different stuff, but how do you keep the bees separate? What do you do? Say, okay, you bees, go get me some orange blossoms, and you bees, go get me some honeysuckle, and I don't know how it's done. So it'd be curious to find out. Hopefully, we'll get him on next week, and we'll be able to talk to him and see how he does and what he has to say. The holiday yesterday put us in a bind, so we didn't do it. I'm going to talk about a few things tonight, and again, a little bit shorter program because I probably could go on and on because I am very good about talking about stuff. But one of the first things I want to cover tonight, we spent a whole lot of time in the past on past programs and with phone calls and squawking and yelling and complaining and trying to get people who were for it on the program. I'm talking about H.R. 1161. If you don't remember, let me remind you what that's all about. H.R. 1161, it started out actually a couple years ago as H.R. 5034. What this is, 5034 and 1161. 5034 died in Congress. Whenever a session closes down in Congress, and if the stuff that they're working on has not been passed, has not been moved out of committee, has not been brought before the floor, then it dies, and it has to be reintroduced the next session. H.R. 5034 was presented to the 111th Congress back in April of 2010. The bill basically was it's a bill to support state-based alcohol regulations, to clarify evidentiary rules for alcohol matters, to ensure the collection of all alcohol taxes, and for other purposes. The short title was called the Comprehensive Alcohol Regulatory Effectiveness Act of 2010, or the CARE Act. And the purpose of this act was to recognize that alcohol is different from other consumer products and that it should be regulated effectively by the states according to the laws thereof, and reaffirm and protect the primary authority of states to regulate alcoholic beverages. In a nutshell, it threw the power back to the states and for the states to regulate it and for the states to take care of it and all that, which basically they do now anyway. I mean, it doesn't do it. But what this does is it takes it completely out of the Fed hands. It just stops it completely, which we discussed this before, and just to talk about it for a little bit here, what it would have done, it would have stopped a lot of small businesses from doing anything with the wine but selling it directly out of the store. It put a lot of the power into the middle party, the distributors, the people who send the wine all around everywhere and take care of it all and all that. And any alcoholic beverage, I'm talking about wine here because we are all about wine, but it also would affect beer. It also would affect spirits. Anything that is distributed, it would be affected, which basically is saying if you have this stuff and you want to sell it anywhere, you have to go through a distributor. You cannot do it any way, shape, or form by yourself. Now, we have been talking to Pennsylvania for the last two or three weeks, and as you know, Pennsylvania has got some new laws into effect that let them sell it around the state and do a lot of stuff there. If this bill had passed, that would have stopped that. So, H.R. 5034, which was introduced in April of 2010, actually died in committee. What happened to it? It went through committee, and there was a lot of senators that were behind this. There was a lot of 136 co-sponsors to the bill. I mean, I looked this up and it was unbelievable. There was, you know, and it crossed over the political lines too. Democrats and Republicans alike were all behind this, all representatives. And it died. It went to a committee and basically died there. This congressional session ended, and the CARE Act of 2010 died a swift and much needed death. In 2011, it was reintroduced. When it was reintroduced in 2011, it was reintroduced as H.R., our House of Representatives, Bill number 1161. Same name, or different name, same bill. Basically, the same thing. There was no changes in it. There was nothing in it. There was nothing about it at all that was anything different than the original bill. Again, put restrictions on shipping of wine, beer, spirits, put it in the hands of distributors. It would have stopped and destroyed small breweries, small distilleries, and small wineries because of the way the thing was worded and all that. This didn't get as much support. There was some support on this, but it wasn't as strong a support as was the original bill that was introduced in 2010. 5034 had a lot of people behind it. It was quite a big following. Every senator, everybody I tried to get a hold of would not talk to me on the radio. I ask them to. I ask them why they were behind it and if they can come and tell us. And nobody would agree to do it. 5034 had the backing of the Brewers Association. They had the backing of Distilled Spirits Council. A lot of people were behind this thing, and none of them would come on and talk to me about it. Well, 1161 was introduced, and that one was not quite as embraced as the original. This one was sort of ignored. Out of having, an enormous amount of people sign up for the original one, over 136 co-sponsors on the original one, this one only had about 25, 27 sign up for this. It wasn't a whole lot that was behind this one. And so we started to see the end of it. The FreeTheGrapes.org was really pushing people to write their congressman. They gave them a site so they can go to it, send an email. It would only take you a couple of minutes to do it, type it in, and send an email. I sent emails to my congressman. I also got response back from my congressman through emails, but I also got response back from them, thanking me for the email and saying they were taken under advisement. They're not going to commit, obviously, but they did respond to me. And so it wasn't as powerful as it originally was. Well, I haven't talked about 1161 in a few weeks, few months, I think it's been, actually. It's been a while since I've squawked, and I do squawk about the 1161 because it's ridiculous. But it's been a while since I've said anything about it. And I was curious, and I wanted to bring it up on the program tonight, what was going on. So I started to look up, and I started to try to find information on 1161 and where it was and what was happening and what was going on. And I couldn't find anything. Everything I was searching under and everything I tried to find, there was no information on the current status. So I called Jerry from Free the Grapes. He was actually on the program with us. And I'm not going to guess. I guess it's been almost a year now. But he was on the program with us, and he talked to us about 1161 and what was happening with it and how you can fight it and what you can do with it and all that stuff. And we had a real nice conversation with him, and he urged everyone to get a hold of FreeTheGrapes.org and let's defeat this. Well, I called him today, and I said, Jeremy, you remember me? And he actually did. I said, what's happening with 1161? And he says, well, he said, nothing. He said, it never went before committee, which is good because that's the first step of getting anything done. It never went before committee. It just sort of languished out there with no one paying much attention to it, but nothing happening on it. The no new bill has been introduced this year by the Senate. The House is pretty much let it go. The wine distributors have came out against it. They were for it. Now they've came out against it, which is big. I mean, that's a big thing. So basically, Jeremy and I agreed that it's not dead, but it's critical. It's on life support right now. 1161 or any companion bills are not doing anything. They're not moving forward. They're just basically pretty much have stopped, which is great. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. It's great that it hasn't moved forward anymore. If you want to find out more about 1161, go to FreeTheGrapes.org. That's www.free, F-R-E-E, the grapes, T-H-E-G-R-A-P-E-S, FreeTheGrapes.org. And it's a great website. I have to say it. It's a wonderful website. I like FreeTheGrapes.org. I check it all the time. But it's got a section on there for the H.R. 1161, and you can read about it. And I think it's still got a spot there. You can continuously send letters to your senator. I don't know if they've taken that down or not. But I never click on the
1161 myself anymore. It's pretty much dead. We can all be real happy about that. We can all be excited about that. We can all rest easy. It is something that the people have finally came up and said, you know, we don't want this. Do something about it. And it seems like maybe they listen. So it's good. It's a good thing. I will keep you informed of what's going on if anything else does with it. But as it stands right now, H.R. 1161 and any companion bills or anything with it is gone. So we can. That's right, Husky. Yes, let's hear it for the death of us. All right. Very good. Very good. So 1161 is done. So we can be happy about that. Referring back to FreeTheGrapes.org, good organization, keeps you informed on what's passing in the different states for shipping and stuff like that. That's the laws are changing all the time, and FreeTheGrapes.org is very good about keeping you informed of what's happening there. So I want to tell you about 1161. Glad I did. Glad I got a chance to do that. Mike will probably listen to this show in archives, and he'll get himself caught up with it also. Another thing, we've been talking a lot, I haven't mentioned it the last two or three weeks, but it's time to review it again, is the truth in labeling. We've talked about the things that you can or cannot call wines anymore, and about the new laws that they have in effect for it, and the new problems that they have with things being close to it and everything. And so designation of wines, or geographic designation of wines. Basically, we cannot, and this is a review if you've heard me, and again, this is something I've squawked about, and thank all of you, true good listeners out there, you repeat listeners. So this is going to be a review for you, but all of you who may be listening to this for the first time, the designation of wine came into effect officially back in May of 2008, which, yes, a long time ago, nobody really knew about it, nobody really paid much attention to it, but May 2008, the designation came into effect. The United States agreed and signed on to this one. Previously, the first law, the first rule, the first one that came into effect was, I keep saying 2006, it's 2005, in May 2005, I apologize. The first law was signed after the Treaty of Versailles. This was after World War I, and it was a designation there. Most of Europe signed on to it, and they had champagne, they had all these other names and all that. Well, the United States didn't agree to that. The United States said, well, we're still going to call our wine champagne, but we're going to call it by the states or by American or stuff like this. So that's why you see names like a New York champagne or a California champagne or even American champagne, very generic, which, we understand it's sparkling wine and we know it's not true. Most people understand, I believe, anyway. And there's a lot of other names out there, a lot of other names that we've used over the years and we've pretty much have worked into our culture, but we really shouldn't now anymore. We can't. We need to start thinking of different names. Some of those names are things like Burgundy or Chablis or Port or Sherry, Moselle, Sauternes. These are all names that are protected. They are protected by designation. Originally, we didn't sign on to that, so therefore, we were able to use these with abandon. And we did. We were calling ports for centuries. As long as it said United States, we were calling sherry's. And we went crazy. In 2005, May 2005, the law was signed into effect that stopped this. You can no longer call these things by these names in the United States or
in any of the other countries that have signed on to this. Most of the European community has signed on to it, which would include Spain and Portugal and Germany and France and Italy and all those over there. And Australia has joined this, as have South Africa, as have New Zealand. I had a blank that I can picture the island, but I couldn't think of the name. As have New Zealand, as have a lot of other countries. Since this thing was originally signed by everyone, these other countries have joined into it and signed on. Also, there is a list of about 21 different names here. I don't think there's that many. I think there's 16 or 17. We cannot call them. Following names have been treated as semi-generic, and we cannot call them that anymore. Now, if you have already had your wine named a port or a sherry or something, you're grandfathered in, which means you don't have to change it. And that's why you're still seeing all these things on the shelf, because they are all grandfathered in. But you will not see any new ones. I have been putting out there to all of you listeners, and I will do so again. And I've gotten a couple of responses. And I also put this out to, I teach a class three times a month, and I put it out to the students in the class. I also bring it out in the tastings at the winery. People are coming in. I always point this out to them in the tastings and stuff. And asking for a different name to call this stuff. Now, sparkling wine, that's champagne. We pretty much accept that. Everyone says that all the time. And people are always coming into the winery saying, do you know you can't call it champagne? It has to be called sparkling wine. I go, yeah, I know. And this is something most everyone knows. But we can't call it port anymore. We can't call it sherry, nor Angelica, or Burgundy, or Claret, or Chablis, or Chianti, or Malaga, or Marsala, or Madeira, or Moselle, or Rhine wine, or Hock, or Sauternes, or Haute Sauternes, or Tokay. These are all the names that are no longer legal. I'm throwing out to you and to everyone, think of a new name, particularly for port and sherry. These are the two that we need to think of a name for. Now, let me tell you a few of the things that you have to face on this. Number one, we have to consider that people are going to understand it and recognize it. I've had suggestions, spell them backwards. Well, how do you pronounce the word sherry backward? Irish? I don't know. It's not going to work. And port is trop backward. And living in the Tampa Bay area, trop is the baseball field that the Tampa Bay Rays play on. So whenever you say trop, that's immediately what comes to mind there. So you see the problem. You have to think of a name that is not going to be confused with something else. I always like to bring up the example, too. You can't come up with a name that's going to mean something else in another language. If you say port and you have people visiting from whatever country in the world, and you come up with a name, you don't want one that might offend them if spoken that way in their language. Example, the Chivas Nova. In Spanish, Nova means no go. So the Chivas no-go, which was not a good thing for Chivas. They didn't sell a whole bunch of those things in Mexico because of that. But here's a good example of foreign influence on naming. Now, it has to also be approved by COLA. And COLA is the regulatory branch of the U.S. government that has to approve every label. They will not approve labels that say port or sherry or all the others I just listed. So it has to be something that COLA will approve. It has to be something that people will recognize. It has to be something that won't offend in a different language. It has to be one that people can accept. The challenge is out there for you. Let's see what you can come up with. If you come up with something, email me at allaboutwineBTR. Is that it? I'm asking my engineer. I guess you... 101. BTR is the Facebook. Okay. Email me at allaboutwine101. That's numbers 101 at gmail.com. And or you can get on the Facebook page. Facebook page is All About Wine BTR, as in Blog Talk Radio, and make a comment on that. Let me know on that too. So if you think of something, let me know. I would love to hear from you. And I've had suggestions. A couple of suggestions came in from some listeners, and they were good. Some good suggestions. But we need to think of things that would be universally accepted and all that good stuff. So, yeah, again, revisiting the designation of names. Let me go through this list of the wines now one more time that we cannot say. Angelica, Burgundy, Claret, Chablis, Champagne, Chianti, Malaga, M-A-L-A-G-A, Marsala, M-A-R-S-A-L-A, Madeira, M-A-D-E-I-R-A, Moselle, which is in Germany, Port, Rhine wine, again German, or Hoch, H-O-C-K, Sauternes, Sherry, or Touquet, T-O-K-A-Y. None of those can be used on the bottles except for the bottles that actually contain that stuff from those regions. So, interesting. Interesting little dilemma that we have with us here. And so, you know, let's hear from you. Moving on to a couple other things here. Farming terms. Wine grape growers use a variety of terms to describe the viticulture practices. And we might see them on bottles of wines and all that. And everybody's real big on organic now. I mentioned this a week or two ago that I picked up an organic wine that said no sulfites detected, and I tested it, and I found about 50 parts per million sulfites in it. I brought that up in one of the tastings I was doing at the winery, and a couple of the gentlemen that were there said, yes, we do tastings of stuff, and they could be using less sensitive instruments to say no sulfites detected. I'm detecting on parts per million starting at about 10 on up from there. They suggested that they might be starting at 100. And if they start at 100 on their testing equipment, they won't detect sulfites. So you need to be careful on labeling on that stuff. If there's no sulfites detected, that doesn't mean they don't have sulfites. But terminology. Let me go through these terminologies for wines for you here, and so you get yourself a little working, mental working idea of what you're looking at and what you're looking for. Biodynamic. Biodynamic practitioners consider the rhythms of the sun, the moon, the planets, and the stars in making planting, fertilizing, and harvesting decisions. It's really, and we've talked to a biodynamic winery in the past. You can check, it was in Sonoma, California. I don't recall the winery right now, but we talked to a biodynamic winery, and I mentioned the criteria for it, too, in the past. The biodynamic winemakers consult the biodynamic calendar to determine the proper days for the task. The growers must feed the soil and plants regularly with servo specific preparation derived from composted plant and animal materials, horns and stuff like that. The ideal biodynamic operation is organic and self-contained. All the vineyard waste is recycled in the vineyard, and there is no need for purchased inputs. In other words, no sprays or fertilizers or any of that stuff. Biodynamic is totally self-contained. Sustainable. If you see sustainable on the label, by most definitions, sustainable operations must be economically viable, environmentally responsible, and socially just. All right, that's rather vague. A grape grower committed to a sustainable practice will take steps to protect riparian areas and minimize chemical use, but they may resort to pesticide if necessary to save a crop. That doesn't mean no sprays. Sustainable practices require growers to consider the health and welfare of their labor force in their decision making. So if they're going to spray, they need to consider what it might do to the labor force, not just to the plants.
A sustainable grower might reason, for example, that applying a relatively benign herbicide such as glyphosate is preferable to requiring workers to hand weed a steep vineyard. So that gives you an idea of what sustainable is. Organic. We're all getting big on this organic thing now. And that reminds me, before I talk about organic, I want to tell you, I just read something in one of my trade journals that the organic products are not being sold as much now as they were a couple years ago. The article cited a couple of reasons. Number one, obviously the economy. People can't afford organic, and organic tends to cost a little bit more. And a lot of the organic products that were out there, there's not as many now. Two or three years ago, you were getting new ones introduced on a regular basis. Weekly, you would see extra organic products out there. Now, not so much. Again, I look at the economy, and people just aren't buying it. They are looking at saving money, and organic doesn't always give you that option. So organic is really starting to hurt now because of that, because of the economy. Organic, the USDA definition, prohibits the use of most chemical herbicides, pesticides, and fertilizers. That's organic. Organic growers are expected to improve the health of the soil through the use of cover crops, crop rotation, and composting. Now, crop rotation does not mean you dig up your grapevines and plant new ones. It means that the cover crops are rotated. That they use, I've heard of organic using tomato plants between the grapevines. I've heard roses. I've heard all sorts of flowers. There's all sorts of different things you can put between the plants to rotate it. They may use elemental sulfur on grapes for mildew prevention. The USDA allows three different organic titles for wine. And this is something you need to be aware of, too. 100% organic. All ingredients, grapes, and processing aids must be from organic sources. Now, this is important. You may find some that are grown in an organic vineyard, but once it gets to the winery, the organic steps stop. So you need to be aware of 100% organic means all the way through. Just the term organic, made from certified organic grapes at a certified facility with no sulfur dioxide used in processing, may use some non-organic ingredients and processing aids, such as tartaric acid and commercial yeast. So again, once it gets into the winery, it's not 100% organic, but it can still be called organic. And then the final one for organic is made with organic grapes. Made with from organic grapes, certified organic grapes at a certified facility. Now, certified, there, I've talked in the past about what certification takes to get a vineyard certified. I'm not sure how long ago, if you want to know the information and you can't find it in the archives, email me. I'll be happy to pass the information on to you. But the certification takes years. It's not something that you decide, okay, I'm going to go organic this year, and then you're certified. It takes years to get it approved and all that. Sulfur dioxide use is allowed in organic grapes, but total sulfites must remain below 100 parts per million. Most all already are. Very few wineries go above 100 parts per million anyway. So, you know, I mean, that's really not a big thing, but some people are really concerned about sulfites. Don't have to be, but below 100 parts per million. That's really 100 parts is quite a bit. Other restrictions apply, including a ban on a popular non-organic yeast nutrient. So those are your designations if you see them on the label. Biodynamic, sustainable, organic, and then organic has three different categories there. Now, since I'm talking about organic, I want to cover something here. I want to read you this quickly. It's the term organic wine in Europe. The new regulation will apply from August the 1st, 2012, which is coming up in, 28 days, 27 days? 26 days. 26 days this new law comes into effect. The wines may therefore be called bio from the 2012 harvest. An exception is made for bottles to be sold in 2012 but made from 2011 grapes. They can be called organic if the manufacturer certifies that his wines were produced in compliance with the new regulations. All right. Excuse me. So, the new regulations apply August the 1st, 2012 for bio wines or for organic wines in Europe, in the EU. If you want to go to the website, here's something that you can look up, www.plusbellelav, as in Victor, IGNEBIO.com. Plus Bella Levine Bio.com. I guess that's what it is. Excuse me. So, the Charter Organic Wine, FINVAB, it prohibits ascorbic acid, citric acid, tartaric acid, potassium alginate, potassium bitartrate, or cream of tartar. Also, phosphate NH4, tannins, and B1O. But it allows the sulfur, a maximum 100 milliliters or 100 per million, and chemical organic yeast, E491, product without synthetic doped oriented sterol. And it also allows fresh pasteurization and reverse osmosis. And we haven't talked about reverse osmosis. That's something I'll have to tell you about in the future. I'll make myself a note and talk about it sometime, but I'll have to tell you the methods of that. I'm making myself a note, so please bear with me for a second. Okay. Now, an organic wine must be different from others. The difference is established on several points. The natural yeast gives personality to the wine. Too much sulfur input makes the wine unpalatable, which, again, 100 is really pretty high, I think. The flash pasteurization standardizes the wine, and reverse osmosis allowed for European organic wine can concentrate diluted must. The wine from organic farming is booming in recent years, and the proof is the wine fair Millesimo Bio, increasing year by year the number of visitors. Millesimo Bio is a wine fair. The concern is usually the tenants remain with the same unchanging winemaker, winemaking. We need to be aware of growers and winemakers to evolve. No addition of yeast, little sulfur, and no inputs. These are things to be aware of. An appellation like Vin Nature or natural wine needs to be created. This is what this article is saying. No added yeast and very little sulfur. We have talented wine growers, French and Italian, who know how to vinify as natural as possible. We need to let them do their thing. The term organic in the United States allows use of chemical yeast, dose of sulfur of 10 parts per million. The term wine from organic farming gives a dose of sulfur up to 100 parts per million, and the winemaker can have 25% of the conventional vineyard in the appellation from organic farming. So, new law, new rule going into effect in Europe end of this month, or the 1st of August, on organic wines. So, that's covered that. And then, one more thing here I want to cover with you tonight. Like I say, it's going to be a little bit shorter show, but Mike's not here, and he and I usually spend some time talking. Since we're not doing that tonight, I'm talking the whole time, and so I'm going to do it. Time to take a sip of wine. Give me a second to do this.
When you're doing a show all about wine, you got to have wine to drink with it, I suppose, don't you? Here's something I just saw a couple of days ago. I have been going on and on and on about how tannins do not give headaches. Never been proven. Tannins won't give you headaches. Sulfites won't give you headaches unless you're allergic to sulfites. Drinking too much wine gives you headaches. And that's really what it is. Although red wines do contain histamines, most of the time a reaction people get is from the histamines, not from the tannins or the sulfites. Saw this article. Let me read it to you instead of trying to paraphrase it and all that. It's just easier to read it to you. It says, splitting headache can be caused by red wine. Wow. Everybody's going, we know. Everybody knows that having one too many drinks can likely result to a hangover the following day. However, a recent study shows that there is an even closer link between red wine consumption and migraines. According to a report, the study showed displays of cerebral headaches on people when they were asked to have red wine. The results were mixed but rather interesting. Red wine and weather may trigger migraines. New research may help answer the age-old question of whether factors such as the weather or drinking red wine can set off a migraine. According to a research presented this week at the annual meeting of the American Headache Society in Los Angeles, and there is an American Headache Society, by the way, both of these factors can trigger the excruciating headaches, but not for all people and not all the time. One small study looked at 33 adults in Brazil who consider themselves regular red wine drinkers and believe that the beverage had caused migraines in the past. All were asked to drink a half a bottle, or 375 milliliters, of Malbec, Tannat, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot wine from South America at least 4 days apart. Can I volunteer for that study? That sounds good. Although most participants reported having a migraine at least once within 12 hours of drinking wine, some wines were more to blame than others, specifically Tannat and Malbec. Both varieties contain higher levels of flavonoids, known as tannins, which provide red wine's rich coloring. Although the study was not a controlled one, conceded study lead author Dr. Abak Kremchentowski, quote, I concluded that the wines with the highest content of tannins, Tannat and Malbec, are those which triggered migraines more frequently, end quote. People who point to red wine as a migraine trigger but still like to drink it should choose wines with the lowest tannin content, added Kremchentowski, who is director and founder of the Headache Center in Rio de Janeiro. It's a small study, but it confirms that what we hear from patients. Wine can trigger migraines, but not necessarily all the time, said Dr. Brian Grossberg, an assistant professor of neurology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and co-director of the inpatient headache program at Montfort Headache Center in New York City. Kremchentowski would like to see data on whether wines from different regions, Australia and France, for example, would behave differently in people who suffer migraines. A second study being presented at the meeting found that outside temperatures can also trigger migraines, especially among people who are more sensitive to temperature. Well, it seems to me, and this isn't in the article, but I'm editorializing now a little bit, how can you blame tannins on it when you're already saying that it could be something else influencing it, like weather? Back to the article. 66 migraine patients were asked to keep a headache diary over the course of a year. Temperature change was linked with mild headaches 21% of the time, but only 5% of the time for more severe headaches. And the association seemed closely linked to cold rather than hot days. The study provides pioneering evidence that headaches are associated more with temperature among those with subjective temperature sensitivity than those without, said the study lead author, Dr. Xuzhen Wang, deputy head of the Neurological Institute at Taipei Veterans General Hospital and a professor of neurology at National Yangmen University School of Medicine in Taipei, Taiwan. If patients report temperature sensitivity, physicians should pay more attention and may adjust preventive agents in certain seasons for those patients, he added. This study, too, confirms patients' accounts and even previous research findings that a rise in temperature increased the incidence of headaches, said Grossberg, who was not involved in either of the studies. But often, it's not just one factor that starts a migraine attack, but two or more together. Sometimes it's one strong trigger, but usually it's a combination of two or more triggers that will precipitate an attack, Grossberg said. Triggers could include menstrual cycles, lack of sleep, inclement weather, and changes in barometric pressure. It's not clear from these studies if other triggers may have played a role in the onset of migraines, Grossberg said. Research presented at medical meetings should be viewed as preliminary because it does not undergo the scrutiny given to studies published in peer-reviewed journals. If there's one thing that was made certain by the research is that no wines are created equal. Some might aid in getting headaches, while others can only deliver a pleasurable palate experience. What this tells to wine lovers is to actually carefully choose the wine to drink. Wine may be a trigger, but other factors may also contribute to having migraines. So, in other words, they really don't know. When you start listing all the other stuff that could cause these migraines and all the other stuff that could be a factor in it, basically you can't really pinpoint it and say that it is the wine or the tannins in it. And I don't think that's really a study on the tannins of the wine to show that tannins give you a headache. So therefore, I have to say that I will continue to say never been proven that tannins give headaches. Until they do a deeper study or a more intense study, that's going to be my opinion. So I think that's going to be it for the program tonight. Like I said, it's going to be a little bit shorter. We're cutting out here about 12, 13 minutes early. But it was a good program. We had ourselves a lot of information thrown out to you there. We had a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of stuff we did talk about. Again, 1161 is dead. Yay. We can also be happy about the fact that it probably won't be introduced again as it stands right now. Well, it's not really dead. It's on life support, but, you know, for all practical purposes, dead. We'll talk about reverse osmosis in coming programs. It looks like it's time to possibly get out of Pennsylvania and start moving on to Rhode Island. We may be going to Rhode Island next week. Although I do have a couple more people to call in Pennsylvania to see if they want to get on the program. They expressed an interest, and so I'm going to be sure that they are given the opportunity. Also, I'd like to get a hold of a Cooper if I can't do that within the next week or two. 2 weeks from tonight, the 19th, I'm not going to be on the program. Mike may decide to run a best of. I don't know. He does that every once in a while, pop on one that has been on before. Or he may decide not to do one at all, or he may decide to get on there himself and do it, because Mike has done that, and he does an excellent job, even if he doesn't want to admit that he does. So, the 19th, I'm not going to be on there, but next week, the 12th, check out the upcoming episode thing here on Blog Talk Radio, or, again, our website. Our Facebook site, I should say, not the website, but Facebook site. Facebook.com/ All About Wine BTR. Become a fan. I always like to say, you know, become a fan because they don't have a love button. Oh, like us because they don't have a love button. So come join us on Facebook. We keep you informed on that, and it's a good way to communicate with me. Also, another good way to communicate is to get a hold of us through
Our email address, that is allaboutwine101, that's 101, the numbers, at gmail.com. And we will be more than happy to correspond with you that way. Also, you can get a hold of me at the winery. It's Florida Estates Winery, and the website there is corp, C-O-R-P, at Floon, F as in Frank, L-E-W-N, Floon as in Florida Estates Winery. If you look at it that way, it makes a lot of sense, .com. Call me, 813-996-2113. That's the winery phone number. I'm there most every day of the week. Be happy to talk with you. You can check out our website at the winery at www.floridaestateswithanswines.com. So thanks for listening tonight. I'll put on the closing thing here if I can find it. I know it's on the list here somewhere. Intro, show ending. There we go. So I'll just let the show close out on you. Thank you very much for listening tonight. It's always nice to know the number of people that are listening to us. It's great. I appreciate it. I know Mike appreciates it. It's a lot of fun to know that we actually have people out there listening to the program. And any suggestions, anything that you have about the program, anything that you'd like to talk about, anything we haven't covered, any of that stuff, and you don't want to come on and ask me, then get in touch with me through emails or through Facebook. I'll be more than happy to talk about the subject that you suggested. We've gotten some suggestions before, and they were excellent suggestions. I always love to hear from you. So look forward to hearing from you, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Have yourself a good one, and we'll see you next week. Okay, wait a minute. This is supposed to be the closeout here. There. Everyone there.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.